we just had to propose that we can't continue to run these programs. There's just no money for them. It's not a management issue, it's just the fact that there's no funds coming in the door.
Kotzebue's Manilik Association announces layoffs. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, federal efforts to address high rates of violence in Native communities.
We think those reforms would significantly improve the safety of women in tribal communities and would allow federal and tribal law enforcement agencies to hold more perpetrators of domestic violence accountable for their crimes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by North Rim Bank, taking your business to the next level. With help from North Rim Bank, spot the turns and opportunities that lie ahead for Alaska. More at northrim.com. Member FDIC.
Kotzebue-based Manilik Association will be laying off around 40 employees effective immediately. Exact numbers could not yet be confirmed, but could possibly be higher. Manilik President Ian Ehrlich made the announcement this morning on radio station KOTZ in Kotzebue. Ehrlich had sent an email to employees this week indicating the cuts, saying that some programs would no longer be in service. As Manilik moves into FY 2012, the new fiscal year starts in October. Ehrlich blamed the federal government for the health providers' budget shortfalls.
When you're putting together a business strategy, you have to make assumptions and you have to forecast numbers. You know, we do the best that we can. It's, you know, Congress, it's up to them to provide the funding for the programs that we're operating on their behalf. And we always would like for them to adequately fund it, since we're really running programs that are out of a trust responsibility. We did hope that they would pass the president's proposed budget for IHS, and it just didn't happen this year. So that caused us, since it was at such a late time in the fiscal year, it caused us to have overruns.
Ehrlich said that Manilik's revenue projection for the coming fiscal year did not materialize due to congressional action, and the reductions in federal funding caused in-house budget shortfalls, which have boomeranged into program cuts.
When we put our budget together, we had about a $12 million gap that we were looking at based off of what we were operating on this year. And so we had to start looking at making some cuts. We brought it down from 12 to 10 million. And at that point, it was pretty clear that administrators were understandably reluctant to let go of some programs. But it comes down to the fact of, do we have funds to run these programs or not? And so we had to look at programs that didn't bring in any money at all, basically programs that we would subsidize.
He said Manilik's board of directors approved the move.
We just had to propose that we can't continue to run these programs. There's just no money for them. It's not a management issue. It's just the fact that there's no funds coming in the door to operate these programs. We had to remove those from the budget, and it was a difficult choice. And it was a proposal that we had to give to the board because we have to propose a balanced budget.
Manilik Communications Manager Maya Lukin says affected employees have already been notified. Lukin says Manilik is attempting to minimize the impact of the reductions by trying to move laid-off employees into vacant jobs in-house. Lukin would not specify the number of jobs lost, saying only that they would be in the programs Manilik subsidized. Rochelle Waterman has been sentenced to 3 years. The Craig woman, who was 16 when her mother, Lori Waterman, was kidnapped and murdered, was tried by an Anchorage jury earlier this year and convicted of criminally negligent homicide. Waterman was sentenced today in her hometown of Craig. She was acquitted of charges of conspiracy to murder and first-degree murder. Lori Waterman was murdered by two of Rochelle Waterman's boyfriends in 2004. Prosecutors say the guilty verdict means that Waterman should have known that Jason Arendt and Brian Riddell, both 24 at the time, posed a substantial risk to her mother, given her interactions with them. Arendt and Riddell are serving long prison sentences. Waterman's first trial ended in a hung jury. The Senate Indian Affairs Committee held a hearing yesterday looking at the issue of the staggering rates of domestic violence and sexual assault perpetrated against Native women, entitled Protecting, Shielding, and Safeguarding Our Sisters, Mothers, and Daughters. Committee Chairman Hawaii Senator Daniel Akaka said many Native women find themselves in unbearable situations. The numbers are bleak. 1 in 3 will be sexually assaulted, and 2 in 5 will be the victims of domestic violence.
These realities are unacceptable, and we must act to change this. Women are also starting to tell their stories about being victimized by traffickers who prey on them in our urban and reservation communities, coercing them into prostitution.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is a committee member. She lamented that even though Alaska has struggled to try to improve those statistics, she says she meets with far too many women who say the bad behavior continues and ripples through the communities. She also agreed with Senator Akaka that sex trafficking is real and happening to young Native women in Alaska.
We have had some really frightening instances where young women coming into town, coming in from the villages, basically being picked up off the street and lost, gone forever into these sex trafficking rings, and the families never knowing where they are or if they'll ever come back.
Tom Pirelli is an associate attorney general at the U.S. Justice Department. He testified that violence in Native communities is a very high priority for the department. He said DOJ is formally consulting with tribes about how best to protect women. He said the current legal structure is not well suited to combat the escalating violence, but he says he sees tribal authority gaps that Congress can address. He says there is at least one ruling that says tribal courts can't issue or enforce protective orders against non-Indians who reside on tribal lands.
We think that's actually contrary to what Congress tried to do in the Violence Against Women Act, and we think it's important to clarify that in legislation.
He says it's also important for federal law to follow states who have developed more severe sanctions as bad conduct increases.
And so we would propose federal legislation that would, again, more clearly track what you see in state law, creating a 1-year offense for assaulting a person by striking, beating, or wounding, a 5-year offense for assaulting a spouse, intimate partner, or dating partner resulting in substantial bodily injury, and a 10-year offense for assaulting a spouse, intimate partner, or dating partner by strangling, suffocating, or attempting to strangle and suffocate. We think those reforms would significantly improve the safety of women in tribal communities and would allow federal and tribal law enforcement agencies to hold more perpetrators of domestic violence accountable for their crimes.
Senator Akaka stressed the hearing record would be open for 2 weeks, and he encouraged the submission of written comments. Links to the webcast of the hearing are at our website, alaskapublic.org. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, visiting a whale census camp near Barrow.
You know, there's other concerns, and things aren't perfect, but nonetheless, it looks like a pretty healthy stock of whales.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
We all need energy to power our homes and businesses. Tapping renewable energy sources like wind, geothermal, and hydro helps keep our economy local, creating jobs, revenue, and power for the state. Learn more at realaska.org. This message sponsored by Renewable Energy Alaska Project, committed to creating a sustainable economic future for Alaska.
Matanuska Susitna Borough Mayor Larry DeVilbiss says he was taken by surprise last week by Anchorage's suit against the Kinnick Arm Crossing. DeVilbiss says he's in talks with City Mayor Dan Sullivan to find a solution to the municipality's concerns about having the bridge situated at the Port of Anchorage. The municipality of Anchorage filed a lawsuit against the federal government over the proposed Kinnick Bridge project, which would link the borough and the city. The suit seeks to have the court require the Federal Highway Administration set aside its decision made last December in favor of the bridge project and send it back for further investigation. DeVilbiss says concerns about the Port of Anchorage expansion plan prompted the legal action.
There is a conflict where the bridge and the end of the port expansion need to coexist, and it's just an engineering problem that that we'll have to work out, but it's not something that's going to stop things as near as I can see at this point.
DeVilbiss says it's too early now to tell what all the options are, but there seems to be room for both port and bridge. Sullivan is on record in support of the Kinnick Arm Crossing. DeVilbiss, who took office in February, said he didn't know there were unresolved issues at the port concerning the bridge design.
The suits certainly got our attention, and that's probably the primary purpose of it.
DeVilbiss says the matter is getting priority attention now, and he has hopes it will be resolved as quickly as possible. The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority on Thursday sent out a request for companies to submit their qualifications to be chosen as developer of the proposed project. The International Whaling Commission meetings wrapped up in Jersey, England yesterday. North Slope officials, including Borough Mayor Edward Itta, were pleased with the tone of the meetings. The real test, however, will come next year when Alaska's five-year bowhead whale quota will be up for renewal. In preparation for that, North Slope biologists have been hard at work on a whale census. New data on the bowhead population count was given to the IWC Scientific Committee during the just-concluded meetings. Earlier this spring, KBRW's Jake Neer went out on the Arctic sea ice with researchers to see how the census is done and how the results could affect the way subsistence whaling is viewed around the world.
Biologist Craig George has an unusual job. He counts whales. It's actually a very complex, dangerous, and important job. Under an international treaty, the United States is a member of the International Whaling Commission and must conduct a census every 10 years to keep track of the size and trends of the stock of whales being harvested by hunters. That's easier said than done. But after 3 decades of doing it, George seems to have developed a fairly workable process.
Well, safety's number one. We want to do this operation safely. So we always carry a radio, we carry a gun, and we call the perch. We call the observation camp and tell them we're coming. South Perch, this is ARF.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Craig and a guest are headed out.
Getting ready to head out into the field for this count also means preparing for some unwelcome company.
We always put four slugs in the gun, and first two are to frighten the bear. One comes in. This is for bear protection. Of course, number one is being vigilant and trying to stay away from them, but if you do, get one at close quarters.
Then it's a 3+ mile snow machine ride out on the sea ice to get where researchers are busy counting whales. The two observation perches are situated on top of pressure ridges in the ice that are as tall as 3-story buildings. When we get there, researchers are twisting their way up and down the giant jumbled hills of ice as they change shifts for the day.
So these guys are coming off watch. Hey, Ross, man. There's still water?
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. Yep. A few whales going by.
George says on this day, there could be hundreds of whales right in front of us swimming under that thin layer of new ice, but we wouldn't know it. In fact, in about a half an hour of watch, we don't see a single whale. Flash forward a few weeks, and George's crew is wrapping up operations out on the perches. He says the count was largely a success, despite the periods of bad weather.
This year, we may have the data to adjust for a lot of those things, and for once, get a really good, accurate, if not precise, estimate of how many bowheads are in this stock.
As of May 30th, they had spotted nearly 3,400 bowheads. They also possibly saw up to 630 additional whales, but weren't able to determine if they were duplicate sightings. George says that's very close to the all-time record for whales seen in a year. Those preliminary results will be used to help aid in discussions this year and next with the International Whaling Commission.
It'll help and clearly indicate that from the, a biological perspective that all the health indicators are good for this particular herd. You know, there's other concerns, and you know, things aren't perfect, but nonetheless, it looks like a pretty healthy stock of whales.
He says the trend over the last 30 years is that the population has continued to increase at about 3.5% annually. Results from past counts also indicate that whale mortality from the subsistence hunt is less than 1% of the estimated population. That's a figure Alaska whalers will likely use to plead their case for a renewed quota. In Barrow, I'm Jake Neer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Lori Townsend. This week on AK, bees. We've all seen them, fat and fuzzy, zigzagging from flower to flower in a seemingly erratic flight to somewhere. Bumblebees were so named for their clumsy trip from bud to bud, not to mention their signature sound, like tiny buzz saws. But now they're disappearing, and that could have dire consequences for the human race. But it's not too late. AK's Ellen Lockyer tells us how we can help save the tiniest threatened species.
So much news coverage these days focuses on big, big catastrophes. The disappearing Arctic ice, endangered whales, the threatened polar bear. But there's another denizen of the North, a tiny one, compared to its four-footed bear brother, that may disappear forever. And that could impact the human race more directly than the demise of any mammal. Consider the humble bumblebee, long a part of our natural landscape and an icon of efficiency and industry. But the reality is populations of bees and other pollinating insects are declining in this country. Why should we care?
80% of the world's crops rely on some form of pollination from an insect. These are our food crops, these are our berries, it's everything. And as the pollinators go, a lot of our food crops are going to be at risk.
That's Mike Racy, an integrated pest management technician with the Cooperative Extension Service.
We need to protect the bumblebees as much as possible. You know, they're better than just like a regular honeybee because they have longer mouth parts that are able to reach nectaries that are further down, like with the blueberries.
Imagine an Alaska without blueberries. They depend on bumblebees.
Their ability to pollinate our berry crops in Alaska is very important from a subsistence point of view to just being able to fill our cellars in the wintertime with jam.
Racy says butterflies, wasps, honeybees, even houseflies can be pollinators, but it's the bombus species, the bumblebees, that do the best job. Bumblebees are found mainly in the northern hemisphere, and they range further north than do honeybees. Colonies have even been found on Canada's Ellesmere Island, close to the North Pole. Whether imported honeybees or native bumblebees, bees are in trouble all around the United States. A San Francisco-based group wants to do something about it, and Alaskans can help. Gretchen Laboon is an associate professor at San Francisco State and the director of the Great Sunflower Project.
The Great Sunflower Project is a citizen science project designed to have people count bees in their backyards to identify the areas where bees are in peril.
The project is meant to attract bees and to allow city dwellers to count how many bees visit a particular flower for a 15-minute period. LeBrun says sunflowers are being used in the lower 48 for a reason.
So by using all the same flour across the country, we're able to compare apples to apples. And we're now accepting data from plants as long as people can tell us what the species is that they were using to sample bees.
In Alaska, there's not a lot of sunflowers blooming in July. No problem. Bees here are attracted to dandelions, Dutch clover, lupins, and fireweed, all of which are blooming right now. What's the point of counting bees? Surprisingly, there's an economic one. LeBrun says economists and ecologists have started working together to find a way to place a financial value on the contribution of natural ecosystems to human existence. And the estimates are eye-opening.
The dollar value of pollination is taken from valuing the crops that are produced and what we would lose if we lost bees as pollinators. And those estimates range from somewhere around $5 billion to $30 billion a year.
LeBrun has lots of facts about the fascinating little creatures. Bumblebees see colors and can vibrate at the same frequency as middle C. Sadly, Western bees are losing ground, and the Bombus occidentalis, once common from British Columbia to California's Central Valley, may already be gone.
And bumblebees should be a particular concern for Alaskans because they are the most important Arctic and Alpine pollinator.
The Great Sunflower Project is meant to heighten citizen awareness, and so LeBrun has taken it to the ubiquitous internet by teaming up with the gardener's social network site, yourgardenshow.com, for a bee-a-thon on Saturday, July 16th.
So on the 16th, to accompany the National Bee Count, we're going to have experts from all over the world who know different things about bees talking and bee gardeners and all sorts of content that you can access from your computer.
Bee-a-thon is a free online town hall event broadcast live on the web. Just go to yourgardenshow.com and click on the Bee-a-thon icon to join up for the Bee Count. Your Garden Show, CEO Tom Finnerty.
We've tried to make it so that it's fun. Then if you can attach making that easy, then who wouldn't want to help? That's one of our goals, is to make a nation of citizen scientists.
The Bee-a-thon allows anyone to make a difference, and the data collected will be used to guide research as to why bees thrive or why they don't. For AK, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And now it's time for our weekly escape to an Alaskan village. Today, we're heading to the same place as all the tourists, Skagway. The small town at the northern end of Lynn Canal booms every summer with cruise ship traffic. We talked with three people in town to get a sense of what it's like, starting with the mayor.
Yeah, my name's Tom Cochran. I've lived in Skagway most of my life. It's been a busy cruise ship season, as always. Skagway's in the top 20 cruise ship destination ports worldwide. We get roughly 800,000 cruise ship passengers between May and September every year. Very seasonal economy, and we're right in the thick of it right now. What we're trying to do locally is diversify our economy. That's been my main goal, and as well as the assembly, to get away from the seasonal-only economy. It's a great place to raise kids, and it's a friendly community. We are pretty close-knit, you know, and sometimes that's good, sometimes not.
Hi, my name is Blaine Merrow. I work for White Pass. I'm the manager of the retail store, and I'm the vice president of the Chamber of Commerce. I have lived in Skagway for about 23 years, and I came up here to work for the summer 23 years ago. It's been the longest summer of my life. We've had a great summer. The weather has been nice. It hasn't been too hot, hasn't been too cold. We haven't had a lot of rain. We've had a lot more RV traffic than I actually thought there would be because of the high gas prices and the economy, but everybody's here that wants to be here, and I think that, you know, these people that come off the cruise ships, this is their one chance, and most of them have saved their entire lives to come to Alaska. And I tell my staff that, you know, you need to make sure that they have a great experience because they only get it once.
My name's Colette Hisman, and I've lived in Skagway 34 years, and my husband and I started, we have a restaurant here called the Sweet Tooth Cafe. My husband was a cook, and I was a waitress, and we knew nothing about running a restaurant. We learned everything the hard way. We've been really lucky with our menu, like with halibut burgers. Everybody wants halibut when they come up here. So we have a lot of halibut. The thing that makes Skagway special to me is that it is like a big family. Even if you don't know somebody on a really personal level, you know of everybody pretty much that lives here year round. I think that in a lot of ways, it's no different back now than it was back in the Gold Rush days, because this was like a base for many people to start out, to go to the gold mines, go to the gold fields. And now it is a base for the cruise ships to come. They dock here, and then people get off and they do their tours. They go on the train or they go on a helicopter, whatever they want to do. But Skagway is, again, still a base for people, a place for people to start, and a place for people to have a good time.
That was Tom Cochran, Blaine Merrow, and Colette Hisman talking about Skagway. 300 Villages is AK's attempt to put every community in Alaska on the radio. Tune in next Friday for more unique stories of life in Alaska. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage and Jake Neer in Barrow. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again is making the best decision for herself and her baby. The mother has a better chance of regaining health and energy between pregnancies, and her baby has a better chance of being born on time and at a good weight. Talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. How do you get men to wear their life jacket when the fact is that 90% of boating-related fatalities in Alaska are men? Well, truthfully, most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Get a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.